For many immigrants, the path to U.S. citizenship is fraught with fears of deportation, separation from family, and confusion about legal requirements. Wednesday night, the Berkshire Immigrant Center is holding a citizenship workshop at its headquarters in St. Stephen's Church in downtown Pittsfield. WIMC spoke with Brooke Mead, the center's executive director, about what immigrants and the community around them can learn from the session.
We're hosting a workshop on how to become a U.S. citizen. There are many advantages of being a U.S. citizen. People can vote. They can travel more freely as U.S. passport holders. Many times children can derive citizenship from their parents. So we really think it's a great thing to promote citizenship, and many of the people that we work with are very excited to become U.S. citizens, and I don't think that there's a better time with the approaching election than to give people information about citizenship and how to become one.
So let's start with the basics. What are the first steps someone who's attempting to become a citizen needs to take?
With everything that's kind of going on with the current administration's policy changes around immigration, I'm really encouraging absolutely everyone to get a good screening from either an accredited representative, which we have here at the Berkshire Immigrant Center, or an attorney, just to make sure that they qualify. So some of the qualifications are pretty easy to determine. For example, most people had to have had their green card for 5 years before they apply. They need to pass an English and civics and history exam, so you're looking at that for a particular applicant. But some of them are a little bit harder to determine whether somebody, for example, has broken the continuity of residence by spending more time out of the United States in the last 5 years than in. So I think it's just really important for people to get great guidance to just make sure that they're eligible. And as sometimes, forms change and prices change and policies change at USCIS, it's really important for somebody to get an overview of how the process works. And so basically, once you've had the screening, then you can apply for through the application N-400, again, either through us or on your own or with an attorney. And generally, then it takes about 3 to 5 months to get an interview here in Massachusetts, and then another month or so after you're generally sworn in as a citizen of the United States.
So one of the things the flyer for the event suggests is that there could be red flags for applicants that might require bringing in a lawyer to the process. What are some of those red flags?
Yeah, so it's interesting because the naturalization, the aspects of the Immigration and Nationality Act that deal with naturalization were passed in 1965. And so largely who qualifies and who doesn't qualify to be a U.S. citizen is largely set out in statute. However, we are seeing in the past couple of years things presenting as problems that maybe weren't in the past. We've heard of a recent naturalization applicant through the attorney that we work with who was turned down for naturalization because her name didn't appear in her father's obituary. And so they said, "We believe that your marriage is fraudulent." This is despite being married for, 6 years and having never met her father-in-law, which she explained. I had a woman a couple of years ago from Africa who had had cancer, and so she had two sons that she was still trying to bring over to the United States, but they were living in Africa, and so she wasn't able to send them money while she was receiving her cancer treatment. And there is a question that says if you ever failed to support your dependents or pay alimony, and they really went after her pretty hard for that. We had to get a lot of extra documentation. So sometimes it's little things like that. And in other cases, certainly we want to make sure that somebody has a green card for the right reasons and that the date on the green card is correct and that they are, in fact, eligible, because I think, in the best case scenario, if you're ineligible, you've wasted time and money. In the worst case scenario, you might also be found to be deportable. And that isn't something that we see a lot of, but it's certainly something people need to be aware of and cautious of when applying.
Now, you a moment ago mentioned these sort of larger national level decisions being made about immigration policy. As those trickle down to Massachusetts, what is that process like? Who are the leaders in the state that help determine immigration policy here in the Commonwealth?
So we don't have separate immigration policies because immigration law is federal. So basically whatever happens nationally is then trickled down to the district directors, of which there are multiple. Ours is, we actually had a meeting with Dennis Reardon a couple of weeks ago. He came out to the Berkshire Immigrant Center. So he is the director for Massachusetts, Maine, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and it's called, I think it's District 1. And basically, so he would take those policies and then he would pass them on to the directors of the field offices, right? And so, like, for example, the field office that deals with deciding or adjudicating naturalization applications for us is Lawrence, and we were lucky enough to have Kristen Smith, the director of that, come out as well to meet with us as well as other advocates to talk about policy and, again, things that we might be seeing that we're confused about, things that we might be seeing that we're concerned about. I was talking to an immigration lawyer recently who said that the number of requests for additional evidence around naturalization cases, notices of intent to deny, which in many cases they feel like are erroneous, have really gone up. I think that there is a clear message that cases are being scrutinized in a different way than they were before, and that's not always ferreting out anything that's bad, but it's certainly just creating more work and bureaucracy, unfortunately, for advocates and attorneys.
Now, speaking of advocates, I know the invitation to the event also extends to allies of immigrants. What could this event bring for people who want to support immigrants in our community?
I lost the ability a few years ago to know how many people will show up who are looking to naturalize themselves. But what I've realized is, I mean, first of all, we all lead incredibly busy lives and have families, and so sometimes people aren't able to make an event. But I also think, again, the rhetoric from the administration, unfortunately, has definitely created so much fear that we've talked about in the immigrant community that people aren't necessarily wanting to gather in ways that maybe they were before. And so I feel like it's more important ever that allies be educating themselves on these things. So in case they have a friend, a neighbor, a colleague who would have benefited from this workshop, they might be able to minimally take back the piece of like, hey, you know, I feel like what I really heard them say is there's never been a better time to apply, and we really think that being a U.S. citizen has even more kind of advantages when we're feeling like the future of immigration in the country is less certain. But at the same time, what I heard them say is that you should go for a screening, and I heard them say that they do this, and it's $25, and it can be waived if somebody can't afford it. I think it's really helpful to have other members of the community passing that information on over dinners and gardening or, you know, the water cooler, so people can benefit from it who aren't necessarily able to attend. And I think that's an area that we're going to continue to concentrate on at the Berkshire Immigrant Center, is understanding that sometimes we're not going to always get the audience of immigrants themselves. But, for example, we had about half allies and half immigrants show up at our family caregiver affidavit workshop in the spring. And it was great, you know, because I feel like a lot of people really left empowered to educate their friends and family members and colleagues who were immigrants, and then immigrants themselves were there. And I think that is really, really what's needed in this political climate.